Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And one of the things that makes this such a great nation is we have always understood in the United States of America the difference between education and indoctrination. In places like Syria, for instance, that distinction doesn't mean anything at all. But in the United States, it should. In other words, part of what education means is you ask people, you teach people to ask questions, not simply to accept what they are told by authority without questioning or without debate. But that idea is very much under threat by a new effort to do for science what the Common Core, which many people have shown great concerns about, what the Common Core movement has done for English and math and social studies. There is a new effort for what is called the Next Generation Science Standards. And here to talk about it in this Science and Culture Hour on the Michael Medved Show with the Discovery Institute, I'm pleased to welcome back Casey Luskin, who is a senior researcher and a fellow of the Discovery Institute. Casey is also an attorney with graduate degrees in both science and law. Casey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Okay, so why did we need a next generation of science standards?
Well, it depends on who you ask, but according to the folks in what we affectionately call the Darwin Lobby, they realized that their efforts to enforce a pro-Darwin-only curriculum in every state around the country, those efforts were not working, and various states were falling through the cracks. They were actually permitting students, of horror of horrors, to question Darwinism. And the way that they thought to fix that problem was to create a nationalized science curriculum that would require students to only learn about the evidence for evolution so they could sort of nip up all those states that had slipped through the cracks and force them to also teach about the scientific evidence only for Darwinism.
1-800-955-1776. Let's get something very clear. And I guarantee you, Casey, because of the way that people hear these issues all the time, we're going to have to come back to this again and again and again. Do you have any objection? Does anyone at Discovery Institute, does anyone who's a supporter of intelligent design, have even the least bit of objection to the teaching of evolution? Isn't it appropriate to teach kids at an early age, in fact, the basics of the theory of evolution?
Absolutely. Students should be learning about evolution. And I went to public schools from kindergarten through my master's degree, and I learned evolution all the way through, and I thoroughly enjoyed studying the topic. So absolutely, Discovery Institute feels that students should learn about evolution. It's a very important theory in biology. And when they go to college, they're going to study it. They need to understand this theory to understand the world we live in. What we object to is students learning about evolution through a very one-sided manner that tries to indoctrinate them in only one viewpoint. We think that students should learn about both the evidence for and against Darwinian theory and not just learn about one side of the issue.
Okay, when you say for and against Darwinian theory, what do you say to the argument that people say there is no evidence against the Darwinian theory?
I say look at the peer-reviewed literature. The peer-reviewed literature is saturated with papers that are critiquing core claims of Darwinian theory, like the idea that natural selection is capable of building the complex features we see in biology, or the idea that all living organisms can be organized into this grand tree of life that shows that they're all related through universal common ancestry. Many of the core claims of Darwinian theory have come under attack in the peer-reviewed literature, and our thought is that if scientists can debate these ideas in their scientific journals, why should students be forced to learn this idea as if there's only one viewpoint that's out there?
Okay, one of the arguments that the other side would make, and let me play devil's advocate here for just a moment. I'm sure we have others who would like to join me in challenging some of what you're saying, Casey Luskin. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number, and we do welcome your disagreeing or challenging or even contemptuous calls. Casey is a well-trained attorney and a bulldog, and he can handle it. 1-800-955-1776. Here is the question that people would put forward, is that at a certain age, isn't it too early to teach the controversy? In other words, if you teach the very basics of evolutionary theory, the idea that there is such a thing as survival of the fittest, of natural selection, that there are mutations and that we have a mechanism that selects out those mutations that are actually going to be beneficial, and that this is the way that species develop and that the general and animals adapt. What's wrong with just teaching that without any questioning for, say, third graders, sixth graders, maybe even eighth graders?
Well, sure, Michael. Of course, any instruction you're going to give needs to be age appropriate. There's no question about that. But I think that if you're able to teach students about the evidence for a particular idea, there's no reason that you have to withhold from them evidence if there happens to be evidence against that idea. For example, the next generation science standards teach students that similarities between vertebrates in their early embryonic stages provides evidence for common ancestry. Okay, fine. We can talk about this concept. If there are similarities between those embryos in their earliest stages, let's talk about that. But there are scientific papers which have talked about the fact that vertebrate embryos are actually very different in their earliest stages. So if we can teach them that they're similar, why is it so hard to teach them that they're different?
Okay, now this gets into one of the most fascinating things in this whole field, and I will never forget reading about this with my jaw dropping in your colleague Jonathan Wells' fine book, Icons of Evolution. There was a Nazi scientist, and he was a Nazi, named Ernst Haeckel, who did these famous drawings of little embryos as they develop, and it showed it. A chicken is just like a human being, and they develop in the womb in utero just like a human being. Except it turns out it's a complete fraud, that if you look at a chicken embryo, even at very early stages, it doesn't look at all like a human being, that Haeckel was drawing this stuff knowing that it wasn't accurate. That's part of what we're talking about here, right?
That is absolutely part of what we're talking about, because Haeckel's drawings still appear in biology textbooks, not in all cases, but in many cases, and they overstate the degree of similarity between the vertebrate embryos. We think students should be taught the facts on these issues, or if there's evidence that contradicts what's in the textbooks, that should not be withheld from students. And you're absolutely right. This is one of the most famous cases of frauds in science. Haeckel's embryos were called fraudulent by Stephen Jay Gould and leading embryologists, yet they still appear in biology textbooks today.
And Stephen Jay Gould, probably the most famous neo-Darwinian, somebody who was really world-renowned for his advocacy of neo-Darwinian theory. Okay, the problem that I think a lot of people feel exists and that requires something like the next generation science standards, and I'm trying to give the argument here as best as I understand it, is that if you read polling, there are a lot of people out there who reject the theory of random, unaided natural selection and undirected Darwinian evolution. A lot of people don't accept that theory. People on the other side take that resistance as just a sign of ignorance. Isn't it important that that ignorance be corrected?
You know, have you read the New York Times story about the next generation science standards, Michael? Because that is exactly why the New York Times said that the next generation science standards are necessary. It said, this is an exact quote, the New York Times said that these standards are necessary to combat widespread scientific ignorance. How so? Because they, quote, take a firm stand that children must learn about evolution. Now, as we said, it is important that students learn about evolution, but what the New York Times means is that they are indoctrinated in only the pro-evolution view. We want students to learn evolution as a science, where they learn to debate the evidence on both sides of the issue, form their own opinions, and learn critical thinking skills as they study this very important topic.
Is there another field, and this is another challenge, and it just occurred to me last night as I was looking forward to seeing you in here. Is there any other area of education where you think it's important that children should learn the controversy rather than simply learning this is the truth, these are the facts?
I think wherever there are legitimate controversies, these topics should be discussed. Let's look at history. If you're looking at why we went to a war in Iraq, there's arguments for and against that war. Students in government and civics classes should learn about the arguments for and against going to war in Iraq. There are other scientific controversies students could discuss, like climate change. There's a huge controversy
climate
over
change.
That.
Bingo. There you go. But again, wouldn't the same people who want the next generation science standards not want people to learn anything at all about controversy with climate change?
You would think that they would want students to learn about controversy wherever it exists. I mean, leading science education theorists recognize that students learn science best when they learn to debate the evidence both for and against a particular concept. This is actually recognized by leading science education theorists as the best way to teach science. Why wouldn't we want to use this approach whenever possible? And so it's interesting, when you read the next generation science standards, they laud values like critical thinking and open and objective scientific inquiry. But then when it comes to the evolution section, they basically throw those virtues away and say, we're just going to teach you this issue in a one-sided manner.
All right, we will be right back with your challenges. And is there an alternative that folks can access to the next generation science standards? We'll get to that question and more with Casey Luskin of Discovery Institute coming right up.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
Minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, where it's easy to save 15% or even more on car insurance with Geico. Just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO, and the only hard part is figuring out which way is even easier. And it's easy to see why Casey Luskin, who is the research coordinator for Discovery Institute, he is an attorney, and he has graduate degrees in science and law. He is somebody who is a great supporter of public education. You went through public schools all the way, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and I studied evolution all the way as well.
And you don't reject the theory of evolution as useless or misleading. You acknowledge, don't you, that evolution provides important insights into the way that species developed?
Unquestionably. I mean, no one doubts that when you define evolution like change over time or change within a species, evolution happens. We can observe it in real time through antibiotic resistance or pesticide resistance in insects. Evolution definitely happens. What many of the skeptics of Darwinian theory would say, however, is we question the claim that's in most textbooks that natural selection and random mutation can essentially produce all of the complexity we see in biology. We think there are limits to what those mechanisms can do.
1-800-955-1776. So the alternative to this next generation science standards, okay, you do have a dog in this fight, and we can let people know that your dog in this fight is a new science curriculum called Discovering Intelligent Design, which, by the way, is available in a special back to school offer. Because for folks who go to our website right now and order their own Discovering Intelligent Design curriculum, you can receive for free two new science documentary DVDs, and I've seen both of them. They're gorgeous and spectacular and wonderful to watch with kids or with other adults. They're called Metamorphosis. It's about butterflies, and Flight, which is about the miracle of different species of birds and the whole development of that mechanism for flight. You can go to discoveringid.org to order the curriculum and to get your free DVDs, or you can click on the science and culture banner at michaelmedved.com. Let's go to Tom in Hermosa Beach, California. Tom, you're on the Medved Show with Casey Luskin.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey.
So my guilty pleasure is I really enjoy this show on History Channel called Ancient Aliens. And the strange people on that show have a theory that aliens came and affected the genetics of the population on Earth way back in the day. And it follows the same as the design theory that you're talking about now.
Why does it follow the same as the design theory? Because my understanding is the ancient aliens believe that they've identified the intelligent designer, and he came from another planet, and he's a different species. Isn't that it?
Well, okay, but so you're saying your design situation is saying that there is God coming down and adding this special factor. How complex it is.
No. You know what? I've read a tremendous number of intelligent design books, and not one of them do they talk about God coming down. They don't. I mean, it's just, in other words, here's the basic point, Tom. We were talking about this last week with Stephen Meyer, author of a wonderful new book called Darwin's Doubt, which I recommend to everybody. If you take a look at the way the DNA works, it seems to be a signature. It's so similar to the way that we design intelligence in computers. It's just we don't have any other models for something like that developing randomly other than the DNA itself, right? In other words, what you're talking about is such a level of complexity. There's no model or no parallel to show anything like that developing randomly.
But how does that, but because we have not seen something yet, we immediately have to go to another, either an alien or God. Was that factor?
Okay, no one's talking about aliens here. Casey Luskin.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen the Ancient Alien show on the History Channel, but we're talking about a scientific argument here. It's an argument that's based upon what we know from the way the world works. We know in our experience that information, encoded language-based information, like what we see in biology, in our experience, only comes from an intelligent cause. So this is not based upon what we don't know or what we haven't seen. It's based upon what we have seen. What we do know from our understanding of the world around us is that when we see the origin of language-based code or machines, they always, in our experience, come from intelligence. But what do we find at the very basis of life? We see a language-based code in the DNA. We see that our cells are full of molecular machines that are running around, performing all kinds of features inside the cell. So intelligent design is a theory that's based upon our knowledge of how the world works. It's not, you know, trying to make, I guess, you know, crazy speculations about aliens interacting with whatever thousands of years ago. We're trying to make a scientific argument saying that we can infer through the methods of science that intelligence is required to explain the origin of the complexity we see in life.
I appreciate your call, Tom. Thanks. Let's go to Alfred in Phoenix, Arizona. Alfred, you're on the MedVed Show.
Hey, thank you so much. My question is, I would like an explanation. If we, as mere human beings, are incompetent of evolving out of the processes of the universe, where did God come from? How did something so big and so marvelous come from? I mean, it takes more to make a God that can create the universe than it takes to make a man. So who's the intelligent designer that designed God?
Casey, do you want to answer that one?
Sure. This is a common question. I think it's being asked seriously, and I'll try to give it a serious answer. So the question of who designed the designer is sort of getting into larger metaphysics and theology almost. So it's outside the scope of the theory of intelligent design. So we're kind of getting into theology here. I myself happen to be a believer in God. I'm a Christian. I come from the Judeo-Christian background. And so by definition, this sort of theologically, God has no origin. God in the Judeo-Christian tradition is an eternal being that was never made, never created. So the question is it a problem for a Judeo-Christian worldview or a theistic worldview that you believe in a designer, in a God that has no origin? It's not a problem because atheists also believe that at the bottom of their worldview is an uncaused cause that had no origin. At the bottom of every atheistic or materialistic worldview is basically an uncaused cause. The universe just, you know, or the chain of events that led to the universe popped into existence for no apparent reason. So the fact that, you know, maybe there's an uncaused cause at the beginning of a worldview is not a problem. The question is your uncaused cause reasonable to believe in? And I think...
And is your uncaused cause material or something else? Is it actually just matter or something else? And if it is just matter, where did the matter come from? We'll get to that and more on the MedVed Show Science and Culture Hour with Casey Luskin.
Portions of the Michael MedVed Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
Third 34 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show. We're talking with Casey Luskin of Discovery Institute about the next generation science standards that have been adopted already by five states, Rhode Island, Vermont, Maryland, no surprise there. But they've also been adopted in Kansas and Kentucky. What does it mean when a state adopts these next generation science standards, Casey?
Well, it means they're basically saying, or some people would say, that they're giving up their own right to determine their own standards, sort of local control, and capitulating to these new nationalized standards, which are in theory going to be adopted by all the states in the country, although I doubt that's really going to happen, but that's certainly what the proponents would like. So they're kind of saying, we're going to give up our right to have local control over our own curriculum, and we're going to defer to what the experts in Washington, D.C. say our students ought to learn, and that's how we're going to teach it.
What do these standards say specifically that you find most objectionable?
Well, I think what it really comes down to is they teach controversial scientific debates like Darwinian theory in a very dogmatic fashion. They don't allow students to ask hard questions about evolution. They only inform them about the pro-evolution view. There are a lot of questions, though, that have been raised about these next-generation science standards. For example, they were developed almost in a kind of secretive manner. Pro-evolution groups were invited to the table to help craft these standards, but groups, prominent groups like Discovery Institute that are skeptical of Darwinism, were not invited.
What kind of questions do you think it would be appropriate for teachers to ask?
Well, you could ask students, is there evidence that natural selection can produce the complex features we see in life? Or is it true that when you look at living organisms, they can all be arranged into a grand tree of life? Is there evidence that contradicts the tree of life? Genetic evidence, anatomical evidence. If we say that genetic similarity or biological similarity always implies inheritance for a common ancestor, are there exceptions to that rule? For example, the fact that humans and squids have almost identical designs to our eyes, yet according to evolutionists, we arrived at those almost identical eye designs convergently, independently, just by chance. So how can you say, you know, this standard evolutionary reason rule that similarity implies inheritance from a common ancestor when there are so many exceptions to that rule? So you can ask students to think through these questions critically and say, and ask, is there really strong evidence for a lot of the core claims of Darwinian theory?
Let's go back to squids for a moment, because this is interesting to me. I don't know the answer to this, and you obviously do, but are we saying that the common evolutionary explanation is that human beings and squids diverged a very, very long time ago before either our ancestors or the ancestors of modern squids had developed eyes?
If they had eyes, they didn't look anything like the eyes that we have today. These are so deep in the past that nobody knows what the ancestors really looked like. But the fact that they have these highly similar camera eyes today is strictly the result of independent chance evolution. That's what the standard evolutionary claim would be today. From a perspective as a proponent of intelligent design, I think when we see these common features being reused in different parts, widely distantly related organisms, I think a much better explanation is common design, because designers will regularly reuse parts that work in different designs. That's why you see a camera eye in humans and a camera eye in squid. Totally different organisms, and their common ancestor isn't even thought to have had a similar type of eye, but yet we see the same type of eye. Common design is a much better explanation in these kinds of instances.
Let's go to Chris in Roseville, California. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Casey Luskin.
Well, good afternoon. Superb discussion on objectivity and independent thought that we should be teaching our young students.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on was that I read a book some time ago, and I think it was written by a doctor up in one of the western states, Oregon, Washington. I think it was about near-death experiences, but some of his proof, because he believes in afterlife, apparently, and in his experiences in the emergency room with patients coming to and so forth. But one of the things that this gets to is the likelihood or the probability of amino acids forming into proteins to become building blocks of life in some random manner. And this is what the evolutionists are arguing, that this could just happen. Well, here's the odds against that happening, according to the book I was reading, is that, let's say you take a 747, you disassemble it and put it in a warehouse, a tornado blows through, and at the end you have a fully functioning 747. What's about the likelihood of these amino acids forming together in proteins that become a carbon life form that looks like a human being, is what his point was. And I think that's one of the most favorable arguments I've ever come across to say that, yeah, there's a God.
Casey Luskin?
Yeah, it's a very good argument against an unguided process like Darwinian evolution. Research today is showing that proteins require a very specific amino acid sequence in order for them to function properly. And the odds of a random process like mutation and then even coupled with natural selection finding those sequences is very unlikely.
We will be right back with Casey Luskin talking about any pushback on the next generation science standards. And are they coming soon to a state and locality near you? More with your calls coming up.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
Forty-four minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, our science and culture update hour with Casey Luskin today with the Discovery Institute. And right now you have an opportunity to get a completely free science and culture update newsletter. You can get it by signing up at the MichaelMedved.com site. Each week's newsletter is going to be highlighting important articles and commentary on the major debates in science over education, research, academic freedom, and much more. If you subscribe, you also get special offers, free downloads, and advanced previews of books and videos. Go to MichaelMedved.com and click on the Science and Culture banner to subscribe. You'll be surprised at how much material there is and the high quality that's available today. Casey, during the break, we were just talking a little bit. We were reminiscing. I mean, I know you went to public schools. I went to public schools my entire school career until freshman year in college. I mean, first grade right through senior year of high school, and pretty good public schools. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is they sort of view this as it's all a replay of the Scopes trial and people who are trying to suppress knowledge of evolution. Because I remember my biology class in 10th grade, and sort of midway through the year, our biology teacher, who was excellent at Point Loma High School in San Diego, just an excellent biology teacher, in the middle of class, and I don't remember why, it may have been in response to a question, but I don't remember. But he made a disclosure. He said, well, actually, it's very, very important what we're learning because we're learning all about Darwin and Darwinianism. He says, but I want you to know, personally, I don't believe in it. And people say, well, why not? Why are you teaching it? Why have you don't? He says, well, I'm a Bible believer, and he believed in 6 days of creation. And everyone in class hooted and laughed and scoffed. And this is back a long time ago. There are reasons, actually. It seems to me that there is more, certainly a lot more, in terms of scientific literature challenging Darwinism than ever before. Why is that?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Michael. As I said earlier, the scientific literature is full of papers that are challenging the core tenets of Darwinian theory. And yet, as these papers accumulate, the Darwin lobby is increasing its stranglehold on public education, preventing
and
teachers.
And a lot of these papers have to do with recent discoveries, don't they? Things about the nature of DNA?
Absolutely. As we've discovered that, as we mentioned with the last caller, that proteins require a very specific sequence in the DNA in order for them to function, questions have been raised. How can a random process like mutation generate the functional sequences that can produce functional proteins? That's a big question. There's a lot of other questions about how organisms are related. Really, the genetic revolution, as we've sequenced the genomes of more and more organisms, has thrown the tree of life into chaos. And today, many evolutionary biologists are scrambling, trying to figure out how can we even say or determine whether or how living organisms are related to one another when there's so much conflict and incongruency within the tree of life. So a lot of the discoveries in the molecular biology revolution over the last few years have changed the game quite a bit. Same with junk DNA. I was taught in college that our genomes are full of useless non-coding junk DNA, and now we're discovering that non-coding DNA has function. It's not just an evolutionary relic. It actually has a purpose, and there's a reason for it being there. And these are game-changing discoveries that are reframing the whole debate in the 21st century over Darwinism.
Let's go to Dave in Milwaukee. Dave, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Casey Luskin.
Yes, since you believe intelligent design should be taught as an alternative to evolution, I'm sure you'd be all right with Darwinists going into churches, synagogues, and Sunday schools and teaching evolution as an alternative to intelligent design, correct?
Well, actually, Discovery Institute does not support pushing intelligent design into public schools, but I would have no problem with an evolutionary scientist coming into my church and giving a talk. As a matter of fact, when I was a student, I started a student club to discuss and debate intelligent design, the kind of debates that my pro-evolution professors would never allow us to have. And my club would go out of its way, even though we were mostly pro-intelligent design, we would go out of its way to invite pro-evolution scientists to come and present at our club because we wanted to learn what they had to say. So I would be very impressed, actually, if more evolutionary scientists would invite, I think, skeptics to come and give presentations. Because I know for a fact, as somebody who spent time in the church, that church members are more than happy to learn about these debates and learn about these controversies. I find that it's the evolutionary proponents who tend to not want to allow the debate to take place.
Dave, if I can just respond to your question in a somewhat different way.
Yeah.
You with us? The basis for giving students and teachers the right to challenge neo-Darwinism has to do with tax-supported schools. I think if you're running a private school, then that should be up to the parent body and it should be up to the people who are paying for it. So I would say that for every one of those churches and Sunday schools and religious schools that is receiving taxpayer funds and is paid for by all taxpayers, by all means. But that would be kind of none of them.
Well, I don't think the taxpayers should have anything to do with this. This is a debate about whether intelligent design is religion or whether it's science. It's not science. It's religion.
Okay. If again, your entire argument is based upon that assumption. And when you have a number of fairly distinguished and not just fairly, very distinguished and well-credentialed scientists, for instance, look at the people who've responded to Steve Meyer's new book, Darwin's Doubt. And they include literally some of the most respected leaders in biology and in the sciences today who don't necessarily agree with everything he's talking about, but say that he asks responsible questions. And you see, the line against religion has always been that religion is trying to shut off questioning, that people are full of faith and therefore intolerant and they burn heretics at the stake. Actually, what's so interesting about this is that it is religious people who tend to be far more welcoming, as Casey just indicated, of debate. So what happens under the next generation science curriculum? What happens if people do challenge it and introduce questions about Darwinism? Are there any penalties or risks? We'll get to that and more with Casey Luskin.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
Fifty-five minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, go to our website, to michaelmedved.com, and sign up for the weekly Science and Culture Update. It's a newsletter. It gets sent directly to you with all kinds of information and links and provocation, such as that provided by Casey Luskin, who's the research coordinator for Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Casey, very quickly, because I do want to try to get some more calls, are there any consequences that are built into the next generation science curriculum if people do, teachers, try to question some of the neo-Darwinist content?
No, there are not. As a matter of fact, it doesn't support or encourage critiquing or questioning Darwinism. But it does encourage, in other sections of the standards, inquiry-based learning. It lauds open-mindedness, objectivity, skepticism, and honest and ethical reporting of findings. That's a quote from the Next Generation Science Standards. It doesn't apply that approach to the evolution section, but I suppose if a teacher wanted to talk about the problems with Darwinian theory, they could cite sections like that to give themselves some cover.
And I know where they could get a good lawyer. you're still available to take that kind of challenge legally?
Well, we certainly do support and defend teachers who are exercising their academic freedom to talk about this sign of a controversy.
Let's go to Barb in Puyallup, Washington. Barb, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hello. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, what is the Discovery Institute's stand on theistic evolution? And my second question was, what about Dr. John Sanford's work on genetic entropy, and how does that affect your work?
Okay. Do you want to answer quickly, Casey?
Sure. Well, theistic evolution, it depends on how you define evolution. If you define evolution as change over time, I don't think anybody's going to see that there's a conflict between believing in God and evolution. But when you define evolution as an unguided process of natural selection and random mutation producing the complexity of life, there I think Discovery Institute would definitely take issue with theistic evolution, the idea that it's easy to merge belief in God and the claim that all life arose through an unguided process. So I think theistic evolution, as it's normally understood as a Darwinian theistic evolution, we're definitely skeptical that that's a viable viewpoint to hold.
Okay, and what about Dr. John Sanford and the genetic entropy?
I can't say I'm super familiar with his work, and so I probably am not able to comment on that.
All right, let's go quickly to Joe in Centralia, Washington. You know what, Joe, we are out of time. And so let me just say we will return. We have another Science and Culture Hour next week. Where we will continue this conversation. Casey Luskin, appreciate the good work. Casey has helped to prepare this new Discovering Intelligent Design curriculum, which is available. It's a special back-to-school offer. Check it all out at our website at michaelmedved.com. Look, this is a conversation worth having because even when it's not in a fall season, where we all are amazed at nature and nature's course, always time to ponder in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture.